因为他可能能要骗不去，他说的权力得了没有。Good morning, official department, CFP department. So it's only yourself, nobody else.
I think Chair, as a staff member of the department, asked them the way.
Okay.But they know that I'm selling his hand. They know that I'm selling his hand.
They do check.
And they chose to come later. Okay. we behave among ourselves, officials from Saga.From the police, from aquatic different systems, and also from SASO and from COSATU. This is a program nearly expected to take place for 2 days, today and tomorrow. But a lot of things, we are likely going to be spending all the day.And conclude all our business today. I would imagine that's fair for us. I guess also has to do with the number of respondents. Unfortunately, on a very critical matter of the nature that we are dealing with, you have expected an oversubscription. We can only hope and trust that with time, these matters are going to be taken seriously. The result of this activity today, I'm sure, shall have to add in that direction. We also do have people from the media and public among ourselves. Welcome to this public hearing. My name is Lulu Johnson. I'm the chairperson of this committee, water and sanitation. Bob Bojan, I'm sure, will introduce himself.
Thank you, chairperson. My name is Alfred Port, a member of.
Okay, can we take any further introductions as and when the presentations are to be done or to be submitted? So that we don't hit, you know, introductions. Only those, I guess, that are not going to be presented can introduce themselves.Can we just get an indication of a very short answer? Those that are not going to be presenting. Okay. If you can just quickly introduce yourself.
Good morning, citizen and the good members. I am representative of the British National Council for Policy. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Major General Charles Johnson. I represent the Detective Service of the South African Police.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members. I'm Major General Andre Pinter, Division of Visible Police.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Colonel Botha from Public Order Police, Western Cape.
Are we done from the time? With those that are not going to be introduced.
Thanks. Any else? I'm Norbert Fun, I'm not a Southern African German Chamber of Commerce and Industry and the South Africa Institute for International Affairs and Cape Town Centre CPF.
Good morning, Mr. Minister. I'm Auditor of the Chief.
is a must mention about that. Our program coincided with that of the minister's prayer this morning. And fortunately, some of us had to go there. And the minister and the first minister had indicated their non-availability due to that program. We also do have another apology here from the Public Affairs Ministry, wherein they had since, as was last night or yesterday afternoon, having indicated their availability, unfortunately, has to tender their apology. Other members are attending other committees. I know the other members are into environment, and others are on agriculture. And some of those are not in Cape Town, they are out on oversight. So the work before us is equal to our attention. I made a few remarks which of course I'm not going to share. Was maintenance is central to upkeep and sustenance of our infrastructure toward provisional service to our citizenry, theft and vandalism has become urgent if we efficiently run our economy and society. Just read from my notes. Whilst it is becoming clearer by the day that for you to be popular these days, you have to be a populist. Among others, to be a populist these days must mean you must be anti-establishment. You must be anti-government. What is continuously the role of any opposition to criticize government anywhere in the world, the line can be very thick or can be very thin. It has to be drawn between being anti-establishment towards accelerating progress or development and or blocking such development or progress. I would argue that such unscrupulous, narrow service and selfish business people are those who have long been exposed by oil and sundry. I am here referring to your buyers of your stolen copper and other steel in our country. Unfortunately, without exception, where such theft and vandalism happens, public good is at best affected. As a result, our economy and society in general is directly affected. Young and old in clinics and hospitals are negatively affected. Schools and old age suffer. Factories in our economy goes down, whether for an hour or so, or the impact that makes leaves a telling story in the short term, in the medium term, and also in the long term. So whether I must wake up and tell these unscrupulous buyers of these stolen goods, enough is enough. We've had enough of shortages of water through theft and copper, theft of copper and vandalism of infrastructure. It cannot go on as business as usual, that you are disorganized in transport, and simply just fix with replacement of such infrastructure and work back in business and nobody is taken to task. Is it not about time that our judicial system review penalties meted against such criminals for much more stringent penalties? That shall teach these perpetrators a lesson never to forget and never to buy stolen goods. I believe that this is direct economic sabotage. And it must be treated as such. This is clearly happening here, and our communities are watching, meaning we are guilty as charged by not becoming the eyes and the ears of our justice system. As responsible citizens, we have a role to play to protecting and advancing our democracy. We fought for our democracy, and ours must always be about defending it, for we don't want to be oppressed anymore. We cannot be watching wrong things happen right in front of our watch. Young and old, black and white, rich or poor, men and women, we all have a duty and we are duty bound to protect and defend our young democracy. If we don't do such, history shall judge us harshly. I don't believe that the next closing for the crop metal company owners and the industry, our collective message must be simple. The people of South Africa have had enough of your preying on the poverty of our vulnerable, unemployed, unemployable, and desperate poor communities. I have thought, welcome, Mama, letter. There are maybe a few comments. In the light of all of these developments that have been ensuing in our country, I'm quite conscious of the fact that police have been doing a great job. I'm equally quite conscious of the fact that organized business has been up in arms in really defending our economy. But you have those rotten potatoes, and they must be rooted out. And unfortunately, they happen to be business people who continue to buy stolen goods. You have a legislation of 2010-2009 with regulations for 2011 that talks basically about what is it called? Second-hand Goods Act. The unfortunate part about that the Second-hand Goods Act, Justice Colleagues, that when you talk to penalties, it talks a pittance 12 months or a combination of other measures. That's what I'm reading out of here. And you can imagine what really happens in a period of 12 months. I can imagine equally. In fact, the question I'm asking myself earlier on, when I was going through some of these documents, was that whether we do have any such cases where there has been any conviction. And so when police shall be talking, they shall refer to such as well. I thought that I said, one needed to make those few comments, members, which are from the departments. Equally, this man is a compliant man for your water and sanitation department. To an extent, we have to comply with the regulations and not do wrong things. We are equally aware of a program that took place, I think it was 2 years ago, when the NCOP met and had a series of a discussion on this very issue. There is a report somewhere where we need to make reference to. And I'm also informed that there is equally an interministerial report that still must be subjected for cabinet approval. So clearly, yes, you're dealing with a major issue of serious concern that is confronting our country. Just one legal experience that we had, this had a very big impact when we did an oversight visit to local concern. I'm not sure whether you were there in Howden. Unfortunately, we couldn't make it. We went to visit a van pumping station there. Wherein, what became very clear is that the stealing of copper in the main station of Eskom, which supplies substation at Hermit, literally renders that substation useless for certain purposes. Now that substation in that pumping station, that pumping station is a key point. 1,600 megaliters of water literally got to stop from being pumped. Expected to supply as far as Rustenburg, going north of Tshwane and far east of Israel, they could rule in those areas. Hence, he then had that problem in Gauteng during those few days in the area there. That was a major issue. It has those impacts. You can imagine you have heard things there, hospitals, schools,
poor 8 homes without water. With electricity, you can afford a generator. But with water, you don't have an alternative. Water can only be water. You cannot replace water with something else. That's the challenge that we have with all these issues that we are dealing with. Just now, yes, night, having had an experience of a load shedding in Port Elizabeth, you had people re-putting their own generators. But when water is not there, you have no alternative means. That's the challenge that you are confronted with here. I hear those of us who are also talking about, you know, the right to know of how many key points we have in the country. What are they going to do with that information? I ask myself that question. If it cannot be about exposing our national key points to security risk, is this what we want? Is this how far our democracy stretches? Is this still democracy or is this about democracy? The difference in democracy and democracy. I would have expected our public protector to really go out of her way and make sure that this issue of theft of property and vandalism of our infrastructure, she goes out there and defends and protects the public out there. I would have thought, again, the issue for me is fashionable to be anti-establishment. It is fashionable to be popular by being populist. Now, dealing with those kinds of issues, as one looks at them, Jody, to understand you really have to save ourselves here. All in assembly, we have a duty of making sure that this matter is not only a matter for the Department of Water and Sanitation. It's not only a matter for rainwater and other water boards. It is also not a matter for police. It's not a matter only for an exclusive domain of the public enterprise. We all are expected to be the eyes and the ears in defense of our infrastructure and protection of such young democracy. So that's what really this is about. But at the end of the day, we are confronted with a serious issue of having to have your infrastructure being disorganized. At the end of the day, service delivery is compromised. That's what it boils down to at the end of the day. I guess also it meant keeping ourselves waiting. Umam Barikela is here with us, and Umam Malulege, having just joined us. With those few words, I thought that would get ourselves going. We have a program for other members who just joined us. We initially were expected to take us 2 days. Because of the responses that we've had, we have since cut our program into a one-day program, which is today. Salga, having to be expected to take us through, has been the first respondent. I saw a few other members in the department, they are here now. Is that correct, Peter?
Sorry?
Is that correct?
In general.
Oh, okay. No, come next time. Salva?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to honorable members, to the representatives of government departments and organizations present in this meeting. I am Councillor Rama Ranela, representing Salva. We are a team of three. I'm with the water specialist from Salva, Mr. William Murray, and Ms. Namawe Tuskani. Chairperson, let me start off by indicating that we was had this opportunity to appreciate the opportunity given to us to come and participate in this hearing regarding this very important topic. I want to agree with this person that as SALC, we are confronted with a situation where municipalities day in, day out are experiencing these issues that we are going to raise today. And they are spending millions and millions of rands in trying to replace the vandalized and or stolen infrastructure. On the 4th of this month, we were invited by the NCOP to come and make a presentation on vandalism and thefts of service delivery infrastructure. We have alerted on a number of challenges that are affecting municipalities. We have made proposals in terms of actually dealing with some of those issues. In our view, as far as we see this as an emerging challenge which needs to be confronted by all of us. It can't be government alone. All organizations would have to join hands with government in trying to deal with this particular issue. We've actually on the board indicated in some instances where copper was stolen and municipalities have to replace those with a lot of millions. Cables have been stolen, as a result people are not getting water and so on and so on. And without any waste of time, Chairperson, allow me to request our water specialist to take the meeting through the presentation that was prepared as well. But also to indicate even before we present that we need the assistance of all of you seated in this meeting. It can be as above. We are confronted with a very serious problem. We are also beginning to get a sense that some of the service providers that we employ to implement projects or put this infrastructure on the ground are also involved in terms of some of this infrastructure. It's an issue that we need to confront going forward. Sorry, but without any waste of time, allow me to request Mr. Barake to take you through his current presentation on the other side. Thank you.
Thank
Thanks, Chairperson, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thanks, Councillor Cesar Maramela, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. As it has been indicated, my name is William Moraga, and I'm heading up the SALGA Water and Sanitation Unit. And we are here to give you our observations, opinions about the subject matter that is kind of been. So we'll take you through a presentation, and then we'll see how far we can go in terms of some of the solutions that we will be proposing. That is the outline of the presentation. It's divided into three parts. Part A will look at the theft and vandalism of industrial income. But when you read the brief, there was also Part B and Part C that looked at what are the water plans there to address aging infrastructure and also, you know, kind of creating synergies between the energy and in the water sector. And I've got one slide for each. Essentially, Chair, and the particular point you touched, we wanted to demonstrate through this particular slide to say if anything goes wrong within the value chain, whether it's theft, whether it's vandalism, whether it's due to lack of operation maintenance, it affects the whole system. Right? And I think of your car. If you've got the tire burst, the car stops. So similarly with a diagram, that anything that happens within that data chain and has a potential to really stop the delivery of water and energy. So we wanted to emphasize that point that it's of importance to acknowledge the interconnectivity of the system as we deliver water. But of importance, Chair, to re-emphasize is the previous diagram that we've indicated. Essentially, each and every component has a value to it. And for us, it then starts to demonstrate that whoever is looking at either vandalizing the infrastructure or stealing, for us, it's actually a serious matter. Because essentially there will be vandalizing infrastructure that, as we speak now, in terms of the figures of 2011, it has a current replacement value of 4.6 billion. So we're talking big money here, honorable members, that has a potential of being stolen or vandalized. And one of the questions that we've asked ourselves is, and I'm sure members of public want to know, where does this thing happen? I mean, where does this vandalism or theft happen in the country? We say, generally speaking, particularly from a municipal perspective, it happens literally everywhere. But the consequence of the subject matter that we're discussing today will differ from one province to the other. And we are of the opinion that in the rural context, because the infrastructure it's just right next door to you. The likelihood of being vandalized is actually high. And saying in the urban context, our opinion is actually organized because a facility that is sitting in Deep Slot, one of our largest treatment facilities in the southern hemisphere, operated by Joburg Water. Ordinarily, an ordinary person would not have access to it and to analyze whatever the case may be. So we think there's a clear distinction here to say what is the approach of the second vandalism in the rural context and what is the first and vandalism in the urban context. But we want to say it happens across the country and within municipalities. Now, one of the analyses that we've done, Chairperson, was to look at ourselves as municipalities to say, what are we vulnerable at as we speak? And it kind of puzzled me in terms of the result that's starting to emerge. And you will look at that diagram with your magnifying glass, and you will not find theft and vandalism in the diagram in terms of what municipalities are saying in terms of the risks that you actually face in the delivery of water and sanitation. And they are ranked in terms of the numbers. We've identified 16 of them, but certain vandalism does not feature at all. So for us, it begins to say, going forward, what is the likelihood of these certain vandalism becoming a high-risk area where we need to apply our minds and then bring up some solutions going forward. So we thought we wanted to highlight that to yourselves. But further, supplementary to what I just said, is the fact that there's a lot of water interruptions across the country, and you would note in terms of that slide that there is actually an increasing water interruption in a number of provinces, in Mpumalanga being the case in point. And our suspicion, Chair, is it's a contribution of all sorts of factors, including theft and vandalism. So clearly, there is an emerging feature that begins to say water interruption is not necessarily as a result of lack of operation maintenance, but also theft and vandalism. And Chair, these are some of our observations in terms of what are the root causes. And our session, to some extent, Chair, speaks to those a couple of bullet points. But we want to emphasize one or two. And primarily, the second bullet, that sometimes there is the inability of our politicians to kind of deliver the promises that they make to communities, And that, in our own opinion, we actually observe as an emerging issue. But secondly, that there is a market for parts, and I think we need to acknowledge that. And I mean, the police services will tell you that I'm sure there's a market for television and electronics. And therefore, the fact that somebody does buy stolen goods creates a market for people to misbehave. But actually, there's also people see it as business opportunities. I mean, we've had certain points in other municipalities, I won't mention names today, to say they kind of, it's a business opportunity for them to do what we call water cutting, that the infrastructure is vandalized, is actually good for their business because they'll be sharing water with the transformers. So we say these are some of the root causes in terms of observation that we've actually seen. What we've also done, Chairperson and honorable members, is to kind of quantify, this particular slide is not in the pen, just to quantify what forms of theft and vandalism that we kind of observe. And we've categorized them into three, that there's actually, people call it unauthorized connection, but we want to call a spade is actually illegal connection. And that, in our own opinion, results as a result of frustration in terms of the level sets. And we'll show you some pictures. And that has two components. One is vandalism, and one is water theft. The fact that a committee member tests into a municipal system and transfer their water into their yard, that, in our own opinion, that's it. It's illegal. And there's the theft, and we'd want to quantify that to say that's criminality. And the fact that people steal copper cables, in our own opinion, that's theft. Right? And there's a theft component that looks at damaging of infrastructure, which is vandalism. So that's the kind of forms of theft and vandalism that we probably want to categorize for this particular subject discussion today. Now, this is what we want to demonstrate as some of the examples, that in certain municipal areas, we go and build a certain facility of sanitation, and what communities are saying is, look, we're sick and tired of this basic service. You know, we want to be progressively be upgraded to better facilities, and hence people are basically saying they want convenience, which essentially should flush into heads, they want status, because you know, everybody who flushes you know, considers themselves as a better person comparatively to a person who uses VIP. And this is what we begin to see in the municipal space, that municipality A, we actually see in terms of use come install VIPs, we want better services. But progressively over a period of time, we need to migrate people or graduate people into better services. So that's the examples we wanted to cite. And then this is the key one for us as well, that you know, people want their connections going forward. You know, they want accessibility. The fact of the matter is, we've seen committees saying, you know, stand pipes, thank you so much. I'm looking for a yard connection for conveniency, so that I can water my garden like my community at any given time. So it becomes important that as municipalities, as we roll out infrastructure, we need them to engage communities vigorously. These are some of the pictures that we wanted to show you. I mean, these are manholes that were stolen in one municipality in Pretoria. And really, we also want to emphasize that this manhole thing is not necessarily a South African, we're not unique. I mean, look at China. I mean, this was like in 2004, but I mean, that's the manhole that actually stolen from the street chains. So we're not immune to these kind of things. And this is, and this picture's not too clear, this is the rock that was put in one of the manholes. And these are the power cables stolen from the pump stations. these results. And we basically say, Chairperson and Honourable Members, what are the consequences of these things? And we've categorized them into three. And we're saying there's actually a social consequence. I mean, if you look at the woman there, I mean, she had to make a plan. I mean, Afrikaans will tell you that you ordinarily excel a blunder. So that's what the lady did at the top picture, to say there's a theft and I can't get access to water, so I'm going to have to revert back to my standard way of fetching water. And similarly, the picture at the bottom was recently taken, and it's a situation that happened in one of our municipalities. Again, I refer to empty promises, and these are some of the political consequences that ordinarily you would see a lot of political protest. And we think, Chairperson, going forward, there is economic consequences as well. And we want to equate those consequences to the impacts of lack of operating maintenance. So for us, theft and vandalism is starting to emerge at the, almost the very same level. I mean, if you look at those two pictures, ordinarily, there will be as a result of lack of maintenance. I mean, if the picture on your left-hand side it pollutes our water resources, and therefore it becomes unacceptable. So we want to say going forward that this theft and vandalism is becoming an issue, and we need to see how we deal with it going forward. We've even quantified some of the theft and vandalism, and those are the figures that we managed to get our hands on from municipalities and other agencies. I mean, we're talking mega money here. It's not necessarily making money. So we say it puts us back to say the investment that we should be making to deliver services for those who don't have, we actually ordinarily spend it to replace homes and belts and all those kind of things. What are some of the suggested way forward? I think, Chairperson, I'm not sure I should mention this, but it will suffice to say this particular picture was taken at the rainwater press conference by the minister to say, look, this cable test will give us a headache going forward, and therefore we need to call law enforcement agencies to help us deal with it. So I'm saying, from that statement, Chair, it gives us the clout to say there is a base in terms of where to start and terrorism measure ahead and going forward. Secondly, I think from a municipal point of view, we need to think deeply about our planning cycles and the last carols. How then do we start factoring such into operation maintenance as part of the package? And build the risk profile of theft and vandalism into that same cycle and quantify it in terms of what it is that we face with. These are some of the initiatives, Chairperson, that are happening in municipalities. Suffice to say, if one looks at the second last bullet, if you look at the UK, I mean, they don't pay cash for scrap. I mean, they use other mechanisms to pay, you know, people who sell scrap. I was trying to do some research, but couldn't get precisely how they do it. But this is a research that was done by Spence Golden to say there is a way of looking at it. Firstly, but secondly, and Chip, as you mentioned it, to say, I mean, can we move into a mode of name and shame? I think I've been reading newspapers some time ago that I think it's in the province, if I'm not incorrect, that if you behave in a particular way and you're convicted doing some act, I mean, for lack of a better way, being caught drinking and driving, I'm advised that the province exposes you. So we say follow a similar pattern, that people who are caught and convicted, you expose them. there are CCTV cameras that are installed, but Chairperson, we want to emphasize that we would need to go into research and measurement of this theft and vandalism. Because at the municipal level, we have not found a clever way of doing it, and I think it's upon us as well to look at means and ways to really operate in terms of understanding what are the causes of this and how, what are the mitigating factors that we need to look into. Yeah, I think let me stop there because I think the one that was interesting was the one for the core was Mwendi Fessin. Thank you.
Those are a few remarks made by Salga. Let's combine the presentation by acoustic deterrent system and then have a combined set of engagement if that is fine, members. We shall appreciate the fact that as we engage in this exercise, much as this is a matter of public concern, same time, which was a question that one was really battling with, having to present here, especially for organizations like Acoustic, Patreon system, whether we should be able to go into any detail it's quite a tricky one that we are into this situation. But what is important is quite a matter that issues of this nature must be spoken about in public, and that we are to be able to rally society behind these calls, and that begin to make noise that says, do not buy stolen goods. To an extent, noises are equally directed to some of those unethical business people. Those noises must get to that point. But as to how and the strategies and, you know, your deterrent systems, having to lay these there, out there in the open, I would imagine here, if you have heard, you know, police equally being expected to present here. And criminals probably hiding somewhere or having some written devices even among ourselves here. You know, how that would turn out to be. But let's listen to the presentations with those questions. Because at the end of the day, we really have to mobilize society. We really have to, you know, run society in partnerships. The point raised by Salga, collaborating among ourselves. You know, with business, with local government, with farmers, you know, with the energy producers. Now, these are all the stakeholders that are very key in this whole process. At the end of the day, of course, the police are leading these processes, but as Water and Sanitation Committee, we took a very keen interest in really beginning to say, you know, let's get out there and allow community and allow society to talk about these issues. Because at the end of the day, we want to really get that knowledge to where it belongs to a point where society is mobilized, and at the end of the day, those unethical business people do find a spot in this unethical behaviors in doing business. I just thought the members, let me just throw that one. It's quite a dilemma we might find ourselves in, especially when organizations like the ones that are going to present are going to be submitting. You want to take us through, Mr. Banker?
Our presentation is quite sound,
Jefferson. Oh, it's a sound bar.
Yeah, it comes back to you why we need to demonstrate some sound.
Oh.
Just give us a few minutes.
So you're going high deck.
Hello. Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Steve Bunker. I represent a company called Acoustic Deterrent Systems. We put together a presentation where, based on our firm belief, that prevention is better than cure. I note from the previous presentation that information about the value of the affected assets and the knock-on effects of vandalism are something which need to be monitored. But the whole thrust of what I'd like to show you, as I say, is preventing the vandalism effect rather than cleaning up afterwards. ADS has developed a system called Acoustic Shield, and we've done it in association with two other companies, Radar Vision and a company called GIST. What I'd like to do briefly is just tell you who we are, just put it in context so that you can see that we have some credibility in what we're about to show you. Who is ADS? We are distributors of, in particular, three non-lethal defensive technologies. The first of those is called long-range acoustic device, and now that it's up and working, we actually have one here. This is our baby, the entry-level one. Others are used on board ships for repelling pirates. There is one on a South African Navy frigate, as we speak. And they're dotted around in 35 countries in the world. Loudspeakers, for want of a better description. The second technology is high-power green lasers. These are also planned to be used on board offshore patrol vessels and frigate refurbishments. Basically, you can throw up a wall of green light at about 1 kilometer away from ship, and it becomes absolutely impossible to navigate through that towards the target. So a combination of communication at long range, and if that doesn't stop the people, then you've established intent, you can then throw up a wall of light. And then the third one is peak beam illumination systems. In a nutshell, these are searchlights, but the difference, you can pinpoint somebody at 4 kilometers. Those are the three technologies we bring to South Africa. Let me just introduce my colleagues here. I'm a director and co-owner of Acoustic Deterrent Systems. And on the end here, operating our speaker today, is my brother, co-director and co-owner, Andy. And to his left is a director of GIST. I will tell you a little bit about GIST as he goes through. We have offices in Durban and Cape Town, and we have developed, in association with these other two companies, Radar Vision and GIST, Acoustic Shield. These are some of our customers. I'm very pleased to see a presence today from the South African Police Service. We have a 2-year contract. We have provided an initial order, and that is the provision of units, including, like the one behind me, for use in crowd control purposes. Just to put things in context, a megaphone or a bullhorn, for example, as mounted on a Niala or some such vehicle, it has an effective range when you're talking to noisy crowds, such as Marikana. A speaker like that has an effective range of 15 meters. Now, from a peace officer's perspective, if you are as close as 15 meters to a 1,000-plus unruly mob, well, you feel the right to defend yourself. I don't want to dwell on this. All I want to say is, currently, the loudest portable speaker system available, such as you have on the Niala's, range of 15 meters, so this little baby, has the same effective range against the disco level of sound of 250 meters. That's the entry level, one on board the frigate. Currently, to be heard at 1.5 kilometers, and the top of the range can be heard at 9 kilometers. So we are talking some serious sound. I will tell you more about that and why that is relevant to our proposal when we get there. Eskom Kuberg, we have some of our equipment installed to enable Eskom Kuberg to meet its statutory obligations to maintain an exclusion zone from the beach side of the facility. We have some offshore customers, Cabinda Gulf Oil, and rather coincidentally, there happened to be an Italian naval fleet floating around Africa, and at the time that one of them was docked in Pointe Noire in Congo, they contacted us and we were able to ship a sizable unit on board that vessel. The first partner is a company called Radar Vision. They manufacture, if you will, detection technologies. So if you put it into the context of trying to identify thieves or vandals, then one can use radar as a detection capability. And they also manufacture this little box here, which is programmable logic controller. Basically, it's a brain that can link together all the different technologies. I'm going to speed up a little. These are some examples of Radar Vision's customers. GIST is a name that is probably known to, or certainly known to, South African government. They provide a range of products, but high security fencing and such like, and they have just completed, I believe, I think the installation of about 40 sites on behalf of Eskom Telecommunications. They also have worked with the Water Department at the moment already. When one is looking at a means of protecting a fairly small asset, such as a small substation or a small station, then this is definitely a way to get. You can construct and put around that asset a catch, in essence. So they have a range of products and capabilities which we have joined forces with in order to address the bigger issues. I'm also very pleased to see somebody here today from the South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry. I'm not sure if he's with us, but anyway. I'm also pleased to see that the facts that we're both presenting, the previous company and ourselves, are the same. Saki estimates the cost to the economy of copper cable theft is 5 billion rand per annum. Now, the cost of, I beg your pardon, the resale value of the copper cable stolen is a mere 7 rand per kilo. So the actual value of the cable itself is, I believe, about 12 million rand per month. But the bigger cost is the cost of repair and replacement. Let me give you a very alarming example. The suburb of Lunasia, in Johannesburg, a couple of guys decided to remove some metal from the base of an electricity pylon. The value of that metal was perhaps just a couple of hundred rand, but this is what happened. The pylon fell over, took out the next pylon, killed power for the whole suburb for 5 days, and cost Eskom 20 million rand to fix. Why is that relevant? Because I believe one needs to look not just at the cost of the items that are being stolen, that's a staggering number in terms of the value of the infrastructure, I have no idea it costs so much, but it's the knock-on effects to the economy that are the real devastating killer. And these are the physical targets. It's electricity generation, well, wherever there's copper cable, but electricity generation, water assets and infrastructure, telecommunications, and as we know, rail transportation. So we believe that we have a reasonable handle on the nature of the problem. We also believe that it is not opportunistic crime. It's syndicated crime. The people doing the stealing, they don't have a need for copper cable, but they have a route to market, as mentioned, through essentially companies who are willing to purchase stolen goods and get them out of the country. right now, the inability to detect these attacks, let alone respond to them, mean that the attackers have fun on their side. They fear nothing. Nobody can respond in time. It's serious, Jefferson. It's extremely serious. If we don't find a way together to combat this issue, ultimately we have no economy. I was up extremely late last night in order to finish this presentation, one of the reasons being load shedding on Sunday afternoon. I believe there was some load shedding in effect for a couple of hours. I was on the receiving end of a 6-hour outage in the four-way area of Johannesburg. So if you lose the power, you also lose the ability to supply water, leading to poverty, ill health, disease, crime, death. And don't be in any doubt. No economy. Have you tried to run your business, your cell phone, your PC, your fax machine, your lighting, your fridge, your without electricity? It cannot be done. Not just talking about big mining houses, it's everybody right through to informal traders. Without power, without water, no economy. How can we win back control? Sure, one can look at the possibility of protecting the critical water infrastructure sites using on-site armed response. But in our view, the human factor will always remain a problem. Errors, fear, collusion being paid off. We must remember it's poverty-driven syndicated crime. We don't personally believe an armed presence on sites will deter attack. In the end, are armed guards linked to kill or be killed? If it were me and I saw a group of reasonably well-defended people coming towards my site, I think I would go and hide. What I'd like to show you is a technology-based alternative to the prevention of intrusion onto critical sites. In terms of what does acoustic shield do, it allows you to detect threats at a distance, in other words, before they have intruded onto the site. It provides immediate response. Immediate response. We can use non-lethal deterrence. When I say non-lethal, I mean purely the use of sound to communicate. And if warning messages are not sufficient, then we can crank up that volume and we can make the environment unbearable for any would-be attacker or criminal. We provide real-time event notification, so if an alarm goes off, then that information is passed straight through to somewhere. The somewhere should be a central monitoring command and control facility. We can provide for verification of the tech. Is it people coming to steal something or vandalize something, or is it simply a cow or a duck in the wrong place at the wrong time? And as importantly, there will be times when there are people going to these facilities who are supposed to be there, municipal workers, water board employees. So we need to have ability to be able to activate and deactivate that system in accordance with properly established protocols, but to be able to do it on site and also to do it from a remote location. Depending on the nature of the site itself, physical barriers may be part of the mix in the solution, but in some cases they are not necessary. We create a wall of sound. There are operational constraints, there are legal considerations, there are health and safety regulations. All of these things do have to be borne in mind. We're not blind to these. We can make a lot of sound with this equipment. It needs to be used correctly, and I will show you a simulation shortly of the right way to deploy this kind of technology. What I would like you to do is think of the acoustic shield as a living, breathing entity with a right to defend itself. So it can sit at a site and it detects and it decides the level of communication and the level of deterrence that it needs to protect. Once that threat has gone away, it calms down. It's just there, it's thinking, living, breathing. I'm here to defend the assets and I'm here to defend myself. Is this sounding like science fiction? Hopefully not. I'm going to show you in a moment. I'm not going to dwell too long here, but acoustic shield is in a sense is a concept in that we can add and subtract just about any element that is required. So my little pointer is working. Let's see if it is. There it is. Hard to see. Okay. At the top here, this particular arrangement was put together by us for a proposal to ESOM Telecommunications. So you will see that there are mentions of ESOM down the right corner here. But in essence, this solution is utilizing radar detection, the things at the top here, feeding that detection into a controller, programmable logic controller, a little computer, if you will, but it's hardwired computer, and that is a product from Radar Vision. And then the Stuttgart RTU, as it is labeled, the box in the middle, receives the detection information. It can be from fiber optic, it can be from ground sensors, but in this particular example, it's using low-cost radar. We're not talking military dollars here. We are talking low-cost radar. Relatively short range, but effective because for this, that was all that was required. So in theory, what has happened is radar detects, the brain wakes up in the middle, and it decides how close is this threat and what level of warning message or deterrent tone needs to be transmitted. And that is then transmitted through these things here, which we call ADS emitters, loudspeakers. The volume required and the number required very much depends upon the size of the site that you are trying to protect. Then, of course, clearly we can add cameras into the mix so that you can see from a distance whether there is a real attack going on or not. This is sounding very military. The strategy is military, but the equipment involved is not. We're not talking mega millions here. This is not high expense items. So those are the components. Let me move on. Just to put things in context, if you had a Sony Walkman on your head or in your ears on maximum, that is about 100 decibels. Okay? I'm just going to do some big math. 2, 4, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6. Okay. The machine behind me here, which as I said is the entry level one, at 1 meter in front of it, it's 64 times louder than a Sony Walkman on maximum. So that gives you some idea of just how powerful this kind of device is. I'm not going to dwell here. This presentation, I believe, is going to be made available to everybody. And we can certainly email this through to the chairperson and secretary for onward distribution. But we have the ability to put in place sound. We're only talking acoustic sound. We're talking what the human, what you hear is what you get. It's none of this infrasound, ultrasound that turns you to jelly and all. It's just what you hear. What you hear is what you get. That's it. But it can be made extremely loud. I'll skip through a couple. Now, this particular site here is in fact an ESCOM radio telecommunication site, or radio site. It's in Driehoek. Driehoek is about 32 km from
from Carltonville. And the reason I'm bringing it up here is because you'll see this is not uncommon. There are two different sites here. The site at the top is the ESCOM site. The site adjacent, we know, is cellular site. We don't know if it's MTN or Vodacom. But the point is, we can make a lot of sound, but there's a neighbor. So the point I wish to make is, although radar will detect people coming, if, let's say, a Vodacom technician is hauled to his site, then we don't want to let loose the hounds of war on somebody who's there on official business. We have to... So we develop site-specific rules which go into that little brain that I showed you on the previous, on an earlier slide, so that it knows, well, 50 meters away in this direction, we've got to take it seriously, but 5 meters away in that direction is fine. 3 meters away, we need to take action. So it's a whole set of rules, site-specific, that can be built, and then the technology will work off that base. Okay, we now have a two-minute simulation. You ready? Okay. Please pay attention to this. It will take only 2 minutes, and it will not be that loud. And by the way, I'm sitting closer to this thing than anybody else. So it's not going to be loud. It's just to demonstrate what can be done. Here we go. They have passive infrared. If everything's working, an alarm goes off, and somebody many miles, many kilometers away, sees a flashing light on the screen and tries to deal with it. Even if they had a fleet of helicopters, I doubt that they could get to the sites in time. The damage will be done. Rehook has what apparently is believed to be the highest level of physical security at an ESCOM telecommunications site. By the way, why is ESCOM telecommunications important? If ESCOM telephone network fails, they cannot manage the power grid. Simple. All data about where power is needed and where you can supply it from, that is information flowing across the ESCOM telecommunications network. They also carry a lot of the cellular traffic to MTN and Vodacom. Not many people know that. They're also backed up to air traffic control.
It would be unfortunate if that control goes down and also ESCOM goes down, but that is the nature of the critical nature of the kind of data flowing across that network. So no telecoms, can't manage the power grid. Can't manage the power grid, blackouts. Blackouts, no pumping stations. It's just a vicious spiral downhill. So the important thing is, our goal is not to blast people with deafening sound. It's to prevent the intrusion. That's pure and simple. So how do we do that? We start with a series of clear warnings in whichever languages are appropriate. All 11, whatever is required. Those warnings escalate in severity and volume the closer the intruders come. If they are still coming, I think we've established their intent. No one can miss these messages. Okay. Did you notice that what we call babble? Have you been to a party? You've arrived late. You can hear or a restaurant, a busy restaurant. You know people are talking, but you can't actually tune in to any one conversation. So we don't have to create different tones. All we have to do is create babble. That's what that was. And that makes it impossible for the team of attackers to communicate with each other. So they not only know they've been detected, then lost the element of surprise. They can't communicate. Ultimately, if that isn't enough, they have to repeat due to fear, due to sheer physical discomfort and pain. But nobody's getting killed yet. Okay, this isn't rubber bullets, plus this isn't water cannons, this isn't tear gas, this isn't pepper sprays, this is sound. You move away, sound stops. No contamination to the environment, to the equipment, or anything. Just sound. Obviously, one site does not fit all. It's very much dependent upon the nature of the asset to be detected. The ESCOM examples are sites that range from 10 by 10 meters up to 30 by 30 meters, one, two, or three brick buildings, and one large transmission mast. What they have in common is they are all in the most inhospitable places in South Africa. One of them is called Windy Ridge, and that just about sums it up. So we have to adapt the solution in order to recognize size of site, the terrain, and of course, how close the facilities are to other businesses, residences, and such like. We also recommend that if this was implemented, that we actually put up some warning signs so that people who may be just hikers or trekkers coming nearby, at least know they are approaching a facility and need to take care, and emergency contact numbers. How can we work with you? Well, we could simply design, supply, install, commission, test, and maintain acoustic shield at a number of sites. We'd be happy to do that. What we can do is take it up a notch and engage by providing the central network monitoring center. If required, we'd be very happy to engage with one of the larger security firms, and provide a service that includes responding with people, with calls, if it's necessary. Where we engage with you, this is a matter of discussion. Some other consideration is that the equipment, we're not talking military weapons, but it is expensive, relatively so, and of course nobody has a budget. Everybody has to solve the world's problems and do it with no budgets. So we can offer a lease rather than a capital purchase arrangement if that is attractive to government. We can build in maintenance, we can build in technology refreshment, nothing stands still. And we have already been in discussion with financial and legal advisors as to how the capital funding could be found from the private sector. Private equity sector, in order to arrive at an operating expense rather than a major capital outlay.
Yeah, fully committed. Michael's gone to the loo, but he is fully committed. Read our vision, they send their apologies, they have a meeting from 10 till 3. We are firmly committed to doing what it takes to prevent rather than cure. When the problem has occurred, you may know who it is. If you've got some CCTV cameras, you may be able to locate the individuals, you may be able to arrest them. Two guys in the Asia caused 20 million rands worth of damage in a matter of half an hour. It, in the end, counts for nothing to be able to say, well, we found them, and we put them in jail. That really does not solve the problem. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. That's the end of my pitch. I'd be very happy to take questions.
The reason why they did not applaud you is because you did not bring any popcorn.
I didn't bring any popcorn.
For the question. Members, those are the few presentations. As I indicated earlier on, the second one might be a little bit tricky. We are responsible. The risk of engaging in any detailed security. You know, I don't know whether I'm too paranoid or not. Those are the two presentations, both from public, in the form of SAG, and also from private, in the form of ADF. On one hand, the problem Helga has pointed and also quantified. On the other hand, there is a solution. any takers? The update forward. These are experiences that we go through on a daily basis. So it's no rocket science that we are confronted with here that we have to deal with. Obviously, alarming information is coming through. Among others, you have thought that, you know, you pay a lot more per kilo for that call. And you are telling it now that, obviously, you're not even sure how much they sell it for. They would have been buying it 7 rand per kilo.
Yes, I believe the person who seals it sells it on at 7 rand a kilo.
The seller from the street sells to the company at 7 rand a kilo.
Yep.
And then the company?
I don't have info beyond that. What I do know is, and maybe...
that would be quite an interesting one. I'm sure from business, the little experience that we have out there. We're not saying the other one is fair or respect. We're not saying that.
I think, Chairperson.
Just allow other members to come from.
Sure.
Thanks for that. And Mama Mulligan?
Thank you, Chair. On the last one, Chair, the things are good and exciting. But I want to check one thing, Chair. You know, we have this striker issue. And then when people hijack the car, they will know where the striker is. Because they are inside jobs from people who are working on those strikers. So I just want to know if this one will not be the same, because you might pay a CP that will work maybe for 2 to 3 years to assist the government, but after people will know how to get inside to get those copper, they will work with the people who are working on the system. So just to get clarity on that one, is this going to be something like a security measure that somebody who's working on that one will be better than you every day? I just wanted to get clarity on that one. On the presentation of SAGA, just want to know, why is vandalism the theft of water infrastructure not among the list of vulnerabilities identified on page 3 of the presentation of SAGA? And how were these vulnerabilities identified, Chair? Just want to check with Saga. And what are municipalities doing to serve the VIP sanitation system of choice to low-cost dignified systems of choice to avoid vulnerability systems? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Just one brief question to Saga. If I understood correctly, when they talked about forms of vandalism, when you give, as an example, illegal connections, and you say these are, to say, criminal acts. Now, my question is, you know, there are schemes outside there whose original purpose was not to supply households, just connection, what you call it, these community points where people get water. Now it starts connecting, and you rightly say that people promote themselves into better lives, connecting to their yards, to their homes, and we call this illegal connections. And if that's the case, what actions or pro actions do municipalities take to help those communities not to engage for those illegal connections? Because, you know, I mean, 20 years down the line, if a scheme was created for other purposes other than household use, why would municipalities not help those communities to connect legally? I know I'm not putting it the way I want it, but you get my point, sir. Hopefully.
Mama,
thank you very much, Chair, for both the presentations from SAGA and the I want to find out from SAGA how far we are with the suggested recipe for the plan, the legislative and policy framework. First of all, I really would like to applaud the fact that SAGA is reaching this stage, because we've always been saying as the committee that there needs to be a plan, and I know the chairman has been talking a lot about the plan, but unfortunately we won't go where we thought we would go this week to also, you know, do exactly. But it's good, it's a brilliant space for us if Falta has gone so far. How many of the municipalities have been informed about your recipe for the plan? And how far are they in implementing the legislative and policy framework, including the NCOP? Has the NCOP been informed about your matching plot, which I like very much? For the acoustic show, thank you very much for the presentation. I nearly asked the chairperson if you have the right to be giving us this information without our defense department not here. I have never seen such a very open presentation in terms of security issues, and I must say it's been a growth level for me. I've always thought that, you know, this part of security is not for anyone. But thank you that you can see there is an alternative as well as that. But now, this information you are giving to us, has it gone through the South African vetting of the law? Is it the information?
The only aspect that requires careful consideration, if you will, is health and safety.
Let's allow it to go through.
Take notes.
Okay, sure. Sorry, I thought I was being up.
Fine. Thank you.
Yeah, I beg your pardon. Thank you, Chair.
I forget easily at 65. So, without feeling any cool.
Did you see the end of that? You see, the challenge that we're facing is that I'm not sure whether, you know, how thick or how thin the line is. I guess that's the point Mama is raising. Whether we do go to any detail when looking at that solution. Yes, the noise is important. To understand, you even went as far as translating that noise you are making physically into that noise which you are making there through your system, your technology. That's the kind of, you know, line that we are wanting to draw. Umama was very pointless in saying whether you have been better identified as near said that you are working in a number of those security establishments, so should naturally take us to that point where it becomes obvious that you are vetted. But again, this is not a forum for us to get to those issues, unfortunately. That for me would be more at policy level. Among others is to ask directly. For instance, knowing full well that SAFS is not here presenting, I would have asked a question directly to SAFS as to whether is theft a punishable crime. Sounds rhetorical. It sounds rhetorical. But your left law, your act on second-hand goods, it talks here of a maximum of 12 years, 12 months, for any transgressor. To understand, I'm asking myself a question, whether have we had any experiences of any conviction, business and stuff. Do we have any conditions that we can talk to? Can speak to the mic, sir. Can speak to the mic.
I attended a session preparing myself for this meeting this morning with Colonel Van Lille. He's the head of Flash in this province. And he couldn't provide any statistics, but he did say that it has been cases where people are at least being threatened with terms in prison, or moreover, up to 10 years. And it would appear that that from what was unofficially sort of mentioned yesterday, that the Act and the Regulations, which actually followed a 1955 Act, and it was in 2009 that the new Act was finally passed and promulgated in 2011. This Act will be a weapon that the police will use in far more concerted efforts in the future. That was my impression yesterday. But no statistics. I can't give you any statistics on convictions.
Yeah, that would be my main area of interest, frankly speaking. And of course, your research that you are engaged in about, I think it's in the UK where there is no changing of cash. I don't know how that works. To an extent, you are to be expected, you know, in that industry. Do you these are means of hidden terminals. If you can comment on that as well. Again, I repeat, the line can be very thin in looking at matters related to ADS. However, there could be policy related matters, which we are really about here. Anything else really belongs to a closed session, if I were to put it in those, you know, categorical terms. Anything that talks, you know, solution. I'm sure we all appreciate here, members, that it can only be the interest, you know, of our own selves, in the interest of our very object of what we want to achieve. At the end of the day, we want to catch the public. At the end of the day, we want to make sure that there is no theft, there is no vandalism, but discussing details of how we do that literally gets to be counterproductive. You know, it does not achieve what we want to get at, to a point where, you know, I made a silly example earlier on, you know, that, you know, those characters could even be having their own listening devices here, you know, so that they are able to come to our services. You know, we don't discuss issues of security in public. That's the bottom line. You can respond on areas where you feel comfortable and you belong to the public, and of course, Salva. If you can start with Salva.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll respond to one or two questions, and now it leaves some questions to Mr. Mack. First, I want to respond to the question of the legal connection raised by the Honourable Member, which I think one issue that we have been raising, to say that people are connecting water illegally. And what does that mean when you say people are connecting water illegally? We must acknowledge that we are a water scarce country. And in the lane we have not reached the universal access to services, but especially on issues of water and other basic services. In most areas, we have actually connected water up to the FTP standards, not necessarily household connections, in most parts of the country. As a result, we have situations where if individuals or people would decide to connect water from the main pipeline to their own households, for gardening, for washing the house, for those kind of things. As a result of them connecting from the main pipeline, the water does not reach the entire community. In terms of the water going to fill them and circulating within the settlements, that water is actually diverted and then the portion of the community does not receive water. That's what we call illegal connection. But however, we should be saying to people that when we have enough water and we've connected people after the FTP standard, people want household countries, they must approach municipalities. We actually make sure that they're actually connected to the only equal enough water to the household. But they have accepted a situation where the municipality will have to meet them. Because they've actually chosen a route of actually wanting them to be connected in their own households as compared to, you know, fetching water from the streets where we've actually connected up to that to the standards. When we're talking about illegal connections, we're talking about a situation where an individual connects water without the permission of the municipality, or it's not the municipality that actually concerns that particular individual. We've made awareness campaigns to communities, we've requested communities to come out and inform municipalities about those people who are actually doing all these things. I must say, it's not only communities. I think we've experienced a lot of problems. We've raised this matter with the Department of Water Affairs, now Water Affairs and Sanitation. There is a situation where, in some instances, even farmers are actually diverting water without necessarily obtaining the license to do that. You'll find that there's a water, there's a river flowing to a particular dam where water has been purified and reticulated to a particular community. But a particular farmer will decide to divert water to his farm without obtaining the necessary license to do that, or the necessary permission from the department to do that. So the issue of illegal connection is actually an issue that would definitely affect the entire community if it's not discouraged or if we're not dealing with that. So in one of the solutions was to say, if the people have already connected water illegally to the household, instead of disconnecting them, you go and meet them so that they pay for that water. But in cases where they're tampered with the main pipeline, which will result in a situation where the part of the communities are not getting water, we'll have to actually remove the pipe, because otherwise the entire community or part of the community will not be able to get water because of the illegal connection. And the manner in which they do it is in such a way that they don't care about the manner of actually doing it. They only care about them getting water from the pipeline to the households for different reasons. And that's what we've been discussing, we're trying to do with that. But it's actually continuing. It's actually continuing, like I've given an example with the farmers, some of the farmers. And we have stressed the department, this is an issue that we need to deal with going forward. Yeah, I think that is the issue that I wanted to deal with, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. This is a very interesting phenomenon. If one were to be specific, now here is a community. In fact, I come from such a community. As Sarkar may be aware of the first presidential schemes, including the apart from Kanyamuti. I think I'm a culprit as well, because in my area, here is the presidential scheme, the Shemela scheme, which was built to supply the community. But now, I'm among those who connected from the main pipe to the household so that I could have a bath and toilets inside. And many other people follow suit. As a result, for 5 years now, there's no water. And the municipality doesn't seem to be... It's a wonderful problem. In that case, what do you think? Or we could take this as an example of investigating and Zaga, which is affecting the whole of the community. Because you may not necessarily respond now, but take it up within your other time. Because I'm afraid to be included in the person who have connected illegally and as a culprit. He said the alternative is for the spirit to disconnect the whole of the community. Can you imagine the uproar that could result from that? And behind the scene, I might be supporting those communities. They protest against the disconnect of the household. Then we
can. I think I would agree with the honourable member. As much as I address the issue, I might not know the gravity in terms of the area that is actually talking about. We will have to actually investigate the matter further, but I think our water specialists will actually fill in on some of the issues with regard to illegal connection. But what I was saying is that if the illegal connections are such that they affect the supply of water to the entire community as a result of the illegal connections, then the municipality will be left with no option but to disconnect the illegal connections so that other members are in a position to actually get water. In an instance where we have enough water, that even after the illegal connections, the entire community is not affected. The one option would be that because you decided to connect your households, we'll put a meter so that you pay for water. Because you eventually decided to want to have water in your own yard, in your own households, as compared to those who are getting water from the streets. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Chair and honorable members. Thanks, Councillor Ramaraman. Let me attempt to answer a couple of questions that were raised. The first one being slide number 7 that talks about vulnerabilities. That is actually a tool that we use for municipalities to assess themselves. So it's a self-assessment to say, these are the list of questions that we're saying to you. How would you rate yourself at the risks that you face, firstly? But secondly, to say, what is the significance of a particular risk? So you do your first self-assessment, and then you give us those answers. And this is an initiative between Saurga and the Department of Water Sanitation. And emanating from that intelligence, then we go into the municipality and develop an action plan to address those vulnerabilities. And hence, I said earlier on that we've already observed over a period of time that this subject matter does not find expression in the vulnerabilities of municipalities. And maybe because of the tough questions you ask, and maybe it's a good point now to say, we would want going forward that the subject of theft and vandalism to fall under item number 9 on the vulnerability, looking at infrastructure asset management. So that, you know, going forward with asking further questions, they should be able to tell us how to do it. So the next time we come in here, we should be able to give a proper undertaking or a proper answer to say how are we dealing with it going forward. Chair and members, I must indicate, and I might get into trouble by saying this, my personal opinion, and out of sorrow, is to say we have not progressively graduated our people. You know, in 2003, there was a strategic framework for water safety adopted by cabinet, and we made commitments to say over a period of time we would progressively improve the delivery of services. And hence we adopted a water ladder and a sanitation ladder. But I need to indicate that my personal opinion is we have not progressively moved towards that. And hence you saw in one of my slides to say, you know, communities also can try to some extent that, they're still using some type of sanitation facility that does not give them dignity, right? And therefore, I mean, as a country, we'll probably need to think deep about different technologies that we need to employ for certain categories of our society going forward. And hence, we are working very closely with the Water Search Commission to say, so give us a solution. What is the research saying in terms of sanitation technologies going forward? So some of us will probably need to work hard with, firstly. But secondly, and we'll come at some point to talk to yourselves. We've kind of re-engineered the whole fiscal system in terms of grants, right? Because we want the grant system or the fiscal system to respond to what is actually required at the time. In some instances, we've seen situations where communities have adopted what we call DIY. They're not waiting for government to come give them tenders, they do it themselves. So, and we need to catch up. And asking solutions that I think, in my own opinion, are better to what actual government is actually providing. So that engineering process for us is important, and going forward what will be, we can come at any given time, Chair, to contact you about how this grant system can assist us to improve the lives of people going forward. What action has been taken in terms of the theft and vandalism? Two parts. The first part is from an infrastructure point of view, and you will know, Honourable Chair, that the grass test is money. And therefore, you know, going forward, what municipalities are doing, they actually purchasing plastic tests, because we've seen that copper pipe or copper tests are actually a source of theft and money. That's what we're doing. But secondly, And we haven't done this level, the thing of community engagement. You know, years ago, we used to have community-based organizations that used to operate municipal systems. And I wonder what actually happened to that kind of an approach. Because we never had this theft and vandalism years ago. I mean, I could even count the vandalism in the palm of my hand. But today, and maybe because of the way the system is designed, it's designed in such a way that it pushes CDOs aside and maybe invites the private sector. I don't know, but that's the observation that we've actually made. So lastly, on the recipe for the plan, that plan, honourable member, as we speak now, is on the basis of the implementation of the National Water Resources Strategy. We developed an action plan that should advance with municipalities, and as we speak, there's actually provincial roadshows that are being undertaken between the department and SAUDA to confirm the action plan that is developed, and the anticipation thereof is in the next municipal budget cycles, that's when that particular plan will be implemented. Let me leave it at that for now. Thanks, Chair.
When the water specialist was talking about some years ago, he's referring to like in the 1970s when he was doing whatever was doing in the 1970s. Ms. Martin?
Thanks, Chair. My apologies for coming in late. We were given a wrong thing when we were moving around out of the Parliament building. Eventually, I was getting lost by one of the social committee members when she brought me here. Chair, on our side, from the Water Resource Infrastructure side, I think when it came out, if you remember, there was something called the Mangaung 4. Those people who had planned to destroy the, or just ambush the conference that was supposed to take place in Mangaung. Two of those people were from my construction unit. And the worry that we had was, what else do they know? And it then raised the question to the department, how solid is our infrastructure security strategy? And we then started a process of developing that one, because what we have realized is that it's very much outdated. Even in terms of categorization of the infrastructure as a national key point, it is delayed. You will even remember when the AG was advised us on the irregular payment of security, because we had to put everything to a halt, because we realized that it does look like we're not very careful on how we engage the security. In terms of the technology, we have not advanced that much. In terms of categorization, so that you can deploy appropriate security measures in particular infrastructure, especially key infrastructure, we have not advanced that much. That strategy is almost on the verge of being finalized in the draft that was tabled about 3 months back. And then we have been asked to rectify it, and it is coming back before end of this year, so that we can then be able to implement proper security measures in our infrastructure. I must say that if you look at the strategy, the water transition is beginning to realize the importance of security, and how water can be used strategically to destabilize the country, and that. A strategy is moving from that basis. Typical example, I heard from the gentleman who was presenting that they are even producing a such high level fence system. Interestingly, you would put a fence in the past 4 or 5 years and you wake up literally the following morning, they've cleaned everything, they've taken everything. So we were really at a stage where we were realizing that the criminals were becoming more intelligent than us. But the strategy, and we're working with some of the people that worked on the platform. It is going to be finalized. We are then going to make sure that we adopt proper technology. We are also going to make sure that we deploy proper resources. But also the strategy is beginning to say, if the Minister of Water and Sanitation has a responsibility over the whole value chain, because we may be protecting dams because right now we are responsible for dams, what then happens to the instances? Because at the end of the day, in most cases, what keeps us awake at night when we cannot sleep because there is a water crisis, you realize that it was happening at the municipality level. There was not enough attention was put on security, or just deliberately people would target that particular piece of infrastructure so that they can be established in the community. So the strategy is also beginning to say, not to say that we are trying to control the municipality, but in terms of the norms and standards, what particular strategies can municipalities also put in place almost across the value chain, the same with water. But if we are saying that water infrastructure is likely to be used as a variable to pursue economic sabotage, so we are not only limiting it into them, but we are saying across the value chain, how can these things interlink, able to maintain stability in the country? I think this is an interesting strategy, Chair. We may come later and make sure that we will be presented to the committee. But we are also taking into consideration the new technology that we have had. We will also look at that. But of course, it will go through proper supply chain measures. But it was an interesting innovation that we heard about it today. Thanks.
The one other challenge, members, that we are certainly having incrementally, water, we are informed that it falls within three categories in terms of transparency. One is the social trust, another one is the economic trust, and the third one is a security trust. So the more I listen to the contributions here, the more I'm getting worried about the extent in which some of those contributions go. And also listening to one of the contributions here about some of the staff members, you get worried almost every time and again. I want us to take a discussion at some point on this specific one, as to how open should we be as a committee, especially when discussing specific other matters of the committee. I'm even tempted even to think ahead on that strategy coming, whether that will have to be subjected to an open meeting. It's not because we are dealing here with a strategy that looks among us keenly on security features of our own infrastructure. Whether it can become that openly, I don't believe so. But that's a matter I want us to take a discussion on. It may not be for now, Chair, but going forward. I just thought I might wish to make that a comment.
Mr. Chairperson, to some extent you've clipped my wings, so I'm not sure how much I should be saying in public. I can recall one question. That question, I believe, I understood it, related to compliance with regulations. Okay. The only aspect of this solution is loud noise that would need to comply with regulations. There are workplace limitations, as I'm sure you know. Anything above 85 decibels for somebody on an 8-hour shift in the workplace, the employer must provide ear defenders, masks, earbuds, whatever. Clearly this technology can make considerably more noise than that. In the particular simulation that we showed, the level of noise at the perimeter of that site has been very carefully calibrated to be not more than, it's in the range 115 to 120 decibels. And it's scientific fact, which is that sound halves with the doubling of distance. So you can, if you are 8 meters away from that sound source, you're around, you're 16 meters, it's half the volume of another. So this is not something which is designed or intended to create permanent damage. This is first and foremost, we see you, and we would like you to keep clear. This is a restricted area or a water, ESCOM, whatever, controlled facility, stay away. And you then elevate the severity of the warning. The use of a deterrent or the use of loud noise, it will be loud enough that people don't want to be there. Okay, loud enough that you don't really want to be there. But you move off and everything calms down again. And nobody gets permanently hurt. So, you're quite right, Mr. Gow. All I wanted to do today was perhaps open your eyes to some of the things that are possible. There are a lot of, I'm no expert in the water and sanitation sector, but I'm imagining that you have a lot of infrastructure which is in remote areas, reservoirs, places where it is difficult to put in place some adequate form of security due to size and due to distance from civilian, distance from people who can respond in time. Here is an idea. It does work. All of the components in it are proven technologies, and it can be used to warn people. I don't know if that has answered your question. I did try and cover in here that we know that there will be regulatory matters which we have to attend to. It's a concept. It's visionary, I hope. And next time I'll bring the popcorn. Thank you.
Members, do you want to take another round? Or do you want to respond to police? Is that a principal plan? It's a rhetorical question. I'm quite conscious about that. I guess my major issue there has more to do with the fact that whether we've had any convictions and what would be the right percentage points.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to try, I'm not a legal leader, but I'm going to try to say that this is a punishable offense. In South Africa, it's defined as taking another person's property without that person's consent for yourself or for your own use. So it is a punishable offense. Coming back to whether we have successes, yes, there are successes, but very few successes relating to especially cable theft and copper cable. For that matter, our challenges that we experience is that we are arresting people under Section 36 and 37 of the Amendment Act, that is possession of stolen property or property presumed to be stolen or the receiving of property presumed to be stolen. Because we have difficulty in many instances to prove ownership of the copper that is recovered because much of the copper cable are not properly marked to identify or it is destructed in such a way that it cannot be identified. Now the Second-Hand Goods Act has been amended to assist. There are specific sections that deals with that prohibits dealers to buy or people to be in possession of people that has been destructed. What we normally find is that people burn the cable to make it impossible to identify. Now the Act makes provision that to be in possession of copper cable or non-ferrous metal that has been destructed or changed is an offense. And to buy such items is also an offense. So the the problem that we have is that it's very difficult to prove that this person who was found in possession of this changed table was in actual fact the person that changed it, and we have difficulty with the prosecuting authority. I don't want to bail placing cases on the court role in that regard. Mr. Chair, I am convinced that with a few changes to the current act and by the proper policing of the act, we might be able to stem the proliferation of non-ferrous metals. The act has been changed. The stiff sentences, the maximum sentence within the current act is 15 years imprisonment. We have a case currently running in the Western, in the Rudapur Magistrates Court, where a dealer has been arrested for possession of and receiving, buying of copper, large amounts of copper, and we regard this as a test case that we will be targeting dealers specifically in terms of the amended new act. But there are processes in place with our secretariat and our legal department to see how we can suggest amendments to the other, to the act. Thank you, sir.
Do you want to comment from business? Mr. Bother?
Just want to ask the police whether they don't think that if we declare copper a precious metal, that that would resolve our problem. Because then you need a permit to have copper. So when any person that's in possession of copper, you will deal with them the same way you deal with them with diamond or gold. Because that is our biggest problem at the moment, is they steal 10 liters of copper, but it costs eventually they get 7 or 8 kilos for the copper. But the problem is it's costing municipality or government eventually billions at the end of the year. Wouldn't that be a solution?
I guess the question that we've been asking and then also it gets to be more of a question that does not only reside yourself. Your minerals and including your justice department. And there has to be a lead department in the equation. That's the major, but that could be one of your major deterrents, if I were to say. Because it's not easy, I mean, for anybody to think of having to carry around, you know, gold or diamond. I'm sure that person will have to be extraordinary careful. But with copper, I mean, you literally throw it in your, you know, how do you call it, wheelbarrow. And just get it through to any scrap metal company. And then I also did ask a specific question from some of, you know, the officials within the state. As to what happens when that copper is received by that scrap metal company? Does it reside, does it... Because at the end of the day, what happens there, that copper is literally taken through for shipment. If you feel quite comfortable in responding to those.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, you're quite right that in order for copper to be declared precious metals, we'll have to collaborate with various departments, justice, mineral and energy, ourselves and so on. So it might be a solution. What I'm from my point is suggesting that the idea of having payment done through the banking system, either electronic funds transfer or so on, that will assist the Lord. Because currently, all that is required from the seller is an identity document. And he or she provides an address, but no proof of address. So we'll have a identity number and address. When you arrive at that address, that person or that address doesn't even sometimes exist. So that's a major challenge. But if it goes through the banking system, the payment goes through the banking system, firstly, the ordinary thief who cuts cable and burns cable, just a few meters of cable, will be deterred because he won't be able, he or she won't be able to sell because normally they don't have banking accounts. And we will be able to trace that person if that person has a banking account. So that would, in itself, would be a deterrent. That's what I, from my side, I would say would be important if we could enforce and make it law that payments should go through the fund, through the banking system. What happens with the metals at the metal dealer or scrap dealer, they compress the metal into blocks, which then are legally sold through our system for export. So they sell to an exporter, the scrap dealer, except for the one big company that I know of. I don't think I should mention the company's name. They are both buyers, receivers, and exporters. But the smaller companies receive, they buy and they receive and they then sell. They compact and they sell to exporters who then have legal permits to export the copper. And our copper is mainly going to China and India. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. As I clearly stated that these are some of the questions that cannot get open answers to, I guess, because of the nature of the issue that you are dealing with, mentioned earlier on. Members, those are the few questions. I'm not too sure whether you still want to have a five, Mr. Pastor.
What is the extent of scrap metal and copper going over our borders illegally? I think that is also like grind horn becoming a big problem for us. There must be demand, that's why they're stealing it. And we've been to some scrap yards to see whether we can find copper in that area, but they don't sell it in that area. So it goes somewhere else. And this is just an idea, is that a problem? Have you occurred a problem that it goes over the border and then from there it's been shipped out of the country?
Any issues, sir? Uh-huh. If there is any.
Chairperson, to my knowledge, we don't have information relating to copper non-ferrous metals illegally leaving our borders. We don't have such information, but it could be a possibility. I just also need to inform there is an interministerial task team led by Deputy Minister Nell, that we specifically looking at measures on how to deal with this phenomenon and put in strategies to curb it. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Maybe that would be one way of approaching the matter. Because there's a lot that has gone into that interministerial task team and a few recommendations have since been tabled for submission to the cabinet level. I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't take a quick one now, and then in the next 30 minutes we are back here, flowing out of this Saudi presentation from Soso and Kosaki. We do have people from Soso at that end. Kosaki? No. They probably locked up in some serious negotiation. Members, let's break here and come back at 1 o'clock promptly. In fact, let's start at 1 o'clock. Thank you.